WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
My guest is comic Yakov Smirnov. 10 years ago, he emigrated with his parents from the Soviet Union to America. In the Soviet Union, Smirnov entertained the troops after he was drafted into the army. When he got out, he worked as a comic on Soviet cruise ships. When he and his parents arrived in the United States, none of them spoke English, and they only had about $100. Today, Smirnov is one of the most successful comics in this country. He drives a Rolls-Royce and lives in a home overlooking Los Angeles. He's developed a comic persona who lampoons Soviet-style communism and jokes about how American culture confuses him. It's gone over quite well here. He performs in comedy clubs across the country. He's been on The Tonight Show, and he appeared in the films Moscow on the Hudson, Brewster's Millions, Buckaroo Banzai, and Heartburn. Last year, he starred in his own syndicated TV series, What a Country. Smirnov's anti-Soviet humor has made a fan of President Reagan, who invited him to perform at a White House dinner for the Conservative Political Action Conference. His latest accomplishment is a new book. It's titled America on 6 rubles a Day, and it's just been published by Vintage Books. Welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You started doing stand-up when you were in the Soviet Union. Now, I know absolutely nothing about what comedy is like in the Soviet Union. Could you give us any examples of the kinds of routines you were doing when you were in the Soviet Union?
Well, comedy is pretty much similar to vaudeville comedy in America like 30, 50 years ago, whatever there was, when people weren't telling jokes about politics that much. Not that much about government or whatever. They would tell jokes about their, you know, mother-in-law or a wife, you know, this overweight or whatever, or a neighbor who is drunk. And that's basically what they do in Russia. That's the safest way of telling jokes, because normally the jokes you hear on stage are very old jokes that proven with time. They're all been censored. And there's a department of jokes that censors the material, and it sounds so weird to Americans. And every minister of culture of every republic has a department of music, department of jokes, and they censor your material once a year, and you have to stay with the script for a year. That's it. You can't change anything. You're like a tape recorder. You walk out, and you just tell jokes.
So you had to do the exact same routine over and over
for a year.
You must have gotten that down pretty well.
Pretty much so, yes. And if someone heckles you from the audience, you can't say, like, your mother wears army boots, because she probably does, and she'll hurt you. So there is not that much happening, and you, creatively, you just suffer. I didn't like it. And then I was lucky to work on the cruise ships where I met people from other countries who were touring around the Soviet Union. And people were so, you could see that they were taking chances. They would say whatever they would want. And I started to realize, wait a minute, there's maybe better life than what I have. And
is there any way, I don't know if this would translate or not, could you possibly tell us one of the jokes or do a small excerpt of a routine that you would do in the Soviet Union?
Sure, sure. I would tell jokes like, for example, little ant got married to female elephant. And after first wedding night, elephant died. And little ant said, only one night I enjoyed myself. And now for the rest of my life, I have to dig this grave. This would be one of those jokes that I would tell. Now, that would border on the line almost that something you wouldn't be able to tell.
Well, what's political about that?
Elephant could have been the Communist Party, and if you say, I mean, they could create, I mean, so when you submit material like that, you never know. It might be cut out easily. I had a joke that was cut out, had nothing really bad in it, that I was talking about that I lived in a communal apartment with my family, with my parents, in the same bedroom till I was 26 years old. And when I was a kid and my parents would want to make love, they would send me to look out the window. And then my dad would say, what do you see in the window? I said, our neighbors making love. He said, how can you tell? I said, because their son is looking at me. That joke was cut out. And they felt that I was making fun of their political, of the economic problems.
When you were in the army, you were entertaining the troops. Was this the equivalent of a Bob Hope type of thing?
Well, yeah, I was younger.
Right. That's the only difference.
Right. Basically, yes, it was similar. You travel around and you tell stories to soldiers, yeah.
Are hecklers as much of a problem in the Soviet Union for comics as they are in America?
No, they don't heckle much.
Seriously,
no,
they don't?
Yeah, no, they don't. People, first of all, there's no drinking in clubs. They're mostly like theaters. So people get drunk already there. I mean, they go there and they're drunk. And the fear, as comedians, has a lot of fear to say something wrong. Heckler has the same kind of fear. He doesn't want to get hurt.
Comic Yakov Smirnov is my guest, and he's, by the way, written a new book called America on 6 rubles a Day. Now, you got out of the Soviet Union. Was it hard to do? Was it hard for you to get out?
It wasn't easy. They don't call you and say, would you please let, you know, would you please go to America or something? You apply for a visa, and it takes a long time. What they do to discourage people who might have a thought of leaving, they make it as difficult for you as possible. They investigate you. They fire you from work. They turn people against you. It's like 60 minutes. And they eventually, some people luckier, some people not. In my case, I was lucky. And they also, what surprises Americans, that they tell you to take your parents with you. Which is, because they don't want to take care of older people. They release a young person, then they say take them, you know, so they save on the pension and the whole thing. They don't have to worry about medical care for them and stuff like that.
So you were able to travel as a family.
Yeah, which was great. You know, I was, because if I wouldn't have my parents here, I would not probably, I would be homesick a lot more. I mean, I don't feel it now, but if I wouldn't have my parents with me, I would.
I really can't imagine how you could have thought that you would make it in America as a comic, knowing that you didn't even speak English.
I didn't know either. I mean, this was something that I wanted to leave Soviet Union. At a certain point, I realized that I want to go. And I didn't care what I would do here. And when I came out here and we landed in Kennedy Airport, and I didn't speak a word of English, and they asked me for the interpreter at the airport in the immigration office, what do you want to do in America? And I said, I want to do comedy. And they start laughing, you know, the people who, at the immigration
office.
You
got your first laugh.
Yeah, and I'm going, this is great. You know, what a country. You know, I'm already making people laugh. Then next laugh was about 6 or 8 months later, but it's okay. It made me realize that people are people and they're enjoying comedy.
You went to bartending school for a while,
right.
Learned how to be a bartender.
That's right.
And you worked at Grossinger's, which was one of the very big resort hotels in the Catskills,
right.
in the Borscht Belt. It's really the capital of Jewish humor in America. You must have been pretty surprised at what Catskill Mountain Resort vacations were like.
Yes, I was. But you know what? It reminded me a lot of a cruise ship on the Black Sea.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I don't know if you've ever been there. There was an area that was like between a showroom and a service bar that looked like a lobby of a cruise ship. And I walked in there and I said, this is great. This is just what I'm used to and what I know. And I said, I don't care what I got to do here. If I have to wash dishes or whatever, I'll stay. And that was a smart decision at that time. I did not make much money. You know, it was like $1.50 an hour plus tips or whatever. Was ridiculous. And hard work, worked very hard.
You were working at the bar?
Well, as a bar boy first, and then became a bartender. But bar boy brings glasses and puts in beer and stuff like that. And that was for a while. But I realized that I liked it. I wanted to be there. And about a year ago, I went back there as a headliner. And last time I was there, I was a bartender. And you know, I was making a little bit more money than $1.50 an hour.
Did you spend a lot of time trying to understudy some of the comics appearing at the nightclub at the hotel?
Absolutely. I mean, that was my beginning. I did not understand most of the stuff yet. And I would listen to them, and the timing was similar. the punchlines. I could understand some punchlines, and like I figured out one joke that was I used to have that joke for a long time in my act about, and I figured it out just by punchline because I did not speak English, and the punchline was I'll tell you no I shouldn't do the punchline for anyway the joke was about the exhibition of women's underwear. And so a French woman asked for to buy 7 pair, and they asked her why, and she said, well, it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I need the... And then American woman asked for 5 pair for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, because Saturday and Sunday she didn't need it. And then Russian woman asked for 12 pair, and they said, why? She said, well, it's January, February, March, And I did not know what they were saying, what it was about, but I recognized Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then I recognized January, February. And I said, I know that joke. And I knew that when I was in Russia. So I translated it, and I said, wow, this is great. It's the same type of thing. So that was my discovery of that American humor was similar to Russian humor.
So you use that joke in your routine?
Yeah, for a long time. It was like public domain joke.
And but how do you feel about criticizing Russian women? I mean, it's a kind of sexist joke, really. And
is
it's
it?
Also,
oh, okay.
Yeah, but but it's also, you know, putting down Soviet women.
Right.
I mean, as much as you might dislike the government there, well, it's a joke that really...
Let me explain you.
The butt of the joke is the women, not the government.
Well, I look at it the other way. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'll explain you my point of view. The reason that Soviet women have the reputation that, you know, of not being as attractive as American women and stuff like that, basically comes back to the government. Basically, they work very hard. There is no living conditions as Americans have. There is no skincare products. There is no clothing that looks women attractive. There's no choices. So they're surviving. They're surviving. They have more pressure than the Russian man has. They work harder. They have to take care of the kids. They get older so much faster than American women, especially in the countryside. If you see in the big cities, you're dealing with more sophisticated women and stuff like that. When you're going a little bit further away from Moscow or Leningrad or Kyiv, Odessa, whatever, you will see some horror things. I mean, women work with their hands picking out potatoes out of the ground or beets or whatever, and you see their hands when they're 25 years old girls or women, they're like, you wouldn't see that on an 80 years old woman in America.
So you think the underwear joke is finally poking fun at the conditions that make it impossible to buy more underwear?
Yeah, basically. That's the way it was in Russia. That's the way people... And also another reason is that American advertising sells on the pretty face. There's as many women probably in America who are overweight or whatever, you know, but they're not what you see when you turn on a television set or a magazine stand.
So who are some of the comics that you got to see when you were in the Catskills starting out?
Well, Jackie Mason, I saw Freddie Roman, if you know Freddie. It was older comedian. I mean, they're very funny, you know, but that
but they were the
style.
Older Borscht Belt
yeah.
comics.
Mm-hmm.
So did you start to think that that's what all American comics are like?
Yes, until I moved to Los Angeles.
And you got exposed to younger comics?
I got exposed to Robin Williams's and Richard Pryor's and people would just, other comedians would just tell me, go watch like Richard Pryor movies and just memorize things. Just that's the way new comedy is. And I would go and I watched, and I could not understand. I mean, I spoke English at that time better, but I still, I was saying, well, this man is unbelievable. But he also, I was thinking, he is a great human being. He talks about his parents all the time. Every other word, he kept mentioning his mother. And then I said, no, I think that's not his mother. That's somebody else's mother, you know. And it was very funny to me later on, but... But then that was the impression that I was getting.
Right, a little literal.
Mm-hmm.
So before you started watching Robin Williams and Richard Pryor and other comics, were you doing a routine that sounded like you were an aging Borscht Belt comic?
Pretty much, I mean, but from Russia, yeah.
My guest is comic Yakov Smirnoff, and we'll talk more about his life in America after we take a short break. This is Fresh Air. Comic Yakov Smirnov is my guest, and he's written a new book called America on 6 Rubles a Day. When you started working the comedy clubs, you told us before in the Soviet Union there was no alcohol there, there weren't many hecklers. You must have had to really brace yourself for the temperamental American audiences.
Yes and no. I think that Soviet Union, is as weird as it's going to sound, what I'm going to say, is a great school for comedy. The reason is you have so many restrictions in terms of you can't talk about politics, government, sex, religion. The rest is fine. But you train yourself to still be funny in those conditions. So it's like a athlete that runs with weights on his feet. You know, when he takes them off, all of a sudden he's better. And that's what I felt when I came to America. All of a sudden, I had so much more to talk about. And I felt that I also had trained myself to restrict myself to not to say dirty things. And I didn't really need to say it. But a lot of young comedians in America fall into that trap because they go in a nightclub where anything goes. You can be as gross as you want to be, as dirty as you want to be, and the shock effect to the audience makes them laugh. The audience laughs because they don't hear those words anywhere, on the streets, maybe in downtown somewhere, but that's it. So people laugh, and then it gives the person, the comedian, a false kind of security, and they need that for the rest of their lives. And I learned that right away when I came to America. I realized that on television you don't hear that, so you hopefully we'll learn how to do it without. And that's what my goal was.
Did any of the comedy club owners take advantage of you early on in your career, figuring that you were a foreigner and you really didn't know the ropes?
Well, yes, but it's not just me. It's everybody. Every comedian is willing to do things because laughter gives you such a high that they obviously have an opportunity to do so. But there are people who are wonderful. I mean, the owner of the Comedy Store in Los Angeles, to me, was like second mother, you know, and she kind of, you know, she took me when I didn't speak English well enough. And then eventually I had two mothers, so I was nagged in both languages, you know.
President Reagan had you perform at a White House dinner for the
Conservative Party Convention.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. How did he find out about you?
Well, I think I was invited by Conservative Party Convention, but I met the president a little bit earlier, like a month, I think, earlier before that. The gentleman who is the publisher of Washington Times, Arnold de Borgegraf, have invited me to his house where he had the president for dinner in the president's honor. And I met with the president basically on like, it was 12 people there, and it was pretty intimate situation. And we were sitting at the same table, and we were telling jokes to each other for like 2.5 hours. And it was like basically me and him telling jokes, and the rest of the people at the table were like listening. And it was fascinating. He's wonderful. He remembers so many stories, it's hard to believe, and especially he loves the Russian jokes. I mean, that's his specialty at this time. So I was very nervous at first, you know, because if he doesn't like it, it's like you'll never work this country again. But he was charming and made me feel very welcome.
You know, it's funny, you're finally in a country where you can make fun of the president in your routine if you want to, right? You can lampoon the president if you want to. You can do political humor if you want to. And so what's happened is you've become the president's friend.
Right,
so,
right. Well, I still do.
In some ways, maybe you're missing a great opportunity.
Nah, I still make jokes about the president. I do. I mean, I don't mind. If it's funny, it's funny. And I think he's one of those people who enjoys good laugh. And I don't see a problem with that at all. I talk about Iran-Contra. I talk about bombing of Iran oil well. I mean,
so you wouldn't feel uncomfortable
no.
about criticizing the president in your routine just because he likes your work.
It's America.
Do you think of yourself as a conservative comic?
Mm-hmm. I would say so, yeah. But I take chances, and I feel that being coming from Russia to America gave me an advantage of seeing America through the eyes of the foreigner. And also, now as an American, it gives me an opportunity to say, well, I'm one of you, and here are the things that I'm seeing that sound doesn't make sense to me. You know, Jim and Tammy Baker don't make sense, you know, or Gary Hart, you know, and stuff like that. So I try to cover as broad a base as possible.
My guest is comic Yakov Smirnov. With glasnost now in mm-hmm. the Soviet Union, and with a slight warming of relations between the Americans and the Soviets, is your anti-Soviet routine going over a little less well in the White House now? I mean, do they want to cool it a little with the anti-Soviet humor now?
I think it goes less in all over the country, basically, which is fine with me. I enjoy readjusting with what's going on in politics. I think that Americans are very much want the what's happening with glasnost, and it's like a light in the end of the tunnel all of a sudden. And so I realized that, and I personally don't know which way it's going to go. Nobody does. But I still make jokes about what is going on. I mean, Gorbachev is obviously a great PR person. He obviously knows what sells in America, and he sells it very... I mean, he can package in America anything. It's like a car salesman. You know, you look at the guy with a birthmark on his head, shape of Poland, and you're saying to myself, well, would I buy a car from this guy? But then if he sells it right, you know, he has a book coming out. You heard it.
Yeah.
And the name of the book is probably would be like, How to Get Rid of Nuclear Missiles and Flabby Thighs in 30 Days, you know, just to sell. So I make jokes about that. I make jokes about modernizing everything in Soviet Union, that he said that he wants to replace hammer and a sickle with a power drill and a weed whacker. But you see, so I'm not doing any more jokes that I used to do more before, that was kind of comparing America to Soviet Union. Now I'm joking about things that are happening today. And I think people need that laugh. They are curious. Now, what's going to happen? Who is this guy? What input do you have to give us? And that's what makes them laugh and relaxed also when I'm approaching the issue. But I'm not going back as much as I was before and just trying to bash, as they were saying, you know, mother country or something like that.
How did you learn how to speak English? I think the most difficult thing to do when you're learning a new language is to figure out how to kid in that language, because right. humor has so much to do with the nuances of language, with puns and little ironies implicit in the way you phrase a sentence, and it's impossible to learn how to do that in a foreign language, and you've obviously mastered it.
Yeah, thank you. I think that it helped me in a way, because I'm like a kid looking at the new things, and if somebody's saying it's raining cats and dogs, you know, I'm saying, where did it come from? I mean, who would come up with it first time, you know? And when you say to a foreign person, you're like thinking, well, umbrellas wouldn't help. Windshield wipers probably go, oh, no, not the Dobermans, you know? So you're looking at all these little expressions or saying, you know, somebody says to me, come on over, we'll chew the fat. Where did that come from? I mean, it's like the picture in your mind is, I got it from the horse's mouth. I'm sure it's an old expression. It doesn't make any sense now, but people carrying it. And so to me, one thing was it was hard to learn about the language, but two, it was giving me a lot of stuff that Americans don't see every day. We get in the car and it says the door is ajar. And you're saying, I can't believe this. I mean, the door is ajar. And then you see people in the car laughing with you because they had that car for 2 years. They never heard it the way I heard it.
So the language seemed very surreal.
Oh, sure.
To you. But how'd you learn it? Did you go to classes?
Yeah,
or just pick
I took
it up?
Classes for about a month and a half. And that was it. That gave me a little basis of the language. But then after that, just talking to people kind of threw myself in the middle of it and start swimming.
Wasn't there, gee, I'm looking at your copy of the book. I had an earlier copy. I thought there was a subtitle. Here it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. America on 6 rubles a day, or How to Become a Capitalist Pig.
Right. That's me.
Yeah. So do you feel like you're really going overboard with your spending now with a Rolls Royce and a big mansion in Los Angeles?
I feel pretty good doing that. I never had it. I never thought I would have it, but I don't think I am. I mean, it's possibly it looks like that, but I don't try to. I feel I'm getting to a certain level when I'm comfortable and I'm feeling secure with that. And I'm not trying to buy a helicopter or a boat or try to top Mr. Jones down the street. I'm enjoying it, and it's fun. I mean, things are coming my way, and I, you know, knock on wood. Is that an American expression?
Yes.
Yes. And why do we knock on wood? We don't know that, do we? And career is going good. Also, you know, things are going very well, and I'm going to be like in Las Vegas, for example.
That should be fun for you.
Yes. I mean, they offered me the Golden Nugget to headline, and that was like from out of the blue. And I said, wow, what a country. This is ultimate capitalism.
We only have a couple of seconds left, so I'll ask this quickly. I read that your parents live in the house that Lenny Bruce used to.
Right.
Do you feel a connection with Lenny Bruce, or was that coincidence?
Coincidence. I just found those needles, and I said, whose are those? No. No, it was just coincidence. It just happened to be in that area of Hollywood Hills where I guess it attracts comedians.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your life. Thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you.
Comic Yakov Smirnov has been my guest. He emigrated from the Soviet Union to America about 10 years ago and has since been on The Tonight Show and movies, clubs, and plus he has this new book, America on 6 Rubles a Day, which is published by Vintage Books. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.